Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.3, where we may not talk as much about sports as you want, but at least it's not a Smash Mouth concert. So this is the awkward introduction to the MGO podcast. We are rapidly running out of ways to talk about sports that aren't quite happening yet. But we are here. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
I am Ace Sandbender.
And Seth would like to tell us about our lovely sponsors.
All right, our lovely sponsors are Underground Printing and the Bose Store. Our associate sponsors are Homeshire Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, and introducing Information Entropy, which we'll hear the ad for later.
Yeah, stay tuned for a pretty lit read on that one.
I don't have any idea what you guys are talking about. I am pure as the driven snow. Speaking...
Especially in this case, funnily enough.
Speaking of pure as the driven snow, the Mohegan Sun Casino. I don't really know what that segue was supposed to accomplish, but they're going to host, apparently, Michigan's non-conference tournament for basketball. They're going to host everything else that this company runs. And you know, we're talking about how to make basketball happen. They're having these kind of bubble situations that aren't like you go away for 3 months and then you see your family at the end of it. It's short-term bubbling, but it's a way to actually get the non-conference schedule done without hopefully getting everyone infected.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're explicitly going out of their way to not call them bubbles. I think they're calling them controlled environments.
Right, after the bubble hashtags went out.
Yeah, t-shirts. You know, the NCAA may have bought some trademarks that, you know, might actually not go off, but that happens.
To offer some defense of the NCAA, there's clearly just some guy whose job it is to think up everything you can possibly trademark. And probably,
oh, yeah. I mean, like, right. It's just someone caught that one and it was funny.
The battle in the bubble.
I do appreciate that the NCAA with this one finally looked at the bubbling as opposed to like everything else that makes their players look like professionals and be like, you know what, this one's not so bad compared to the other ones.
Well, I mean, just in terms of being able to get a season in, what I look at it is like Michigan's supposed to go to the Mohegan Sun Casino and play two games and then head home. And it kind of feels to me like while they're there, they should pick up another three or four games just to get, you know, usually in a basketball offseason, you have like what? You have like six real non-conference games maybe. And it feels like there's going to be an ACC Big Ten challenge. You're going to have mm-hmm. this tournament. I don't know how you're going to, I mean, you're probably not going to play Oregon, which Michigan is scheduled to do. So the way to get the real non-conference games, you would need to have a reasonable tournament selection process is just to head up somewhere and bang out six or seven and then go home and not play your guarantee games probably this year and just prepare for conference scheduling.
Yeah, ESPN's Jeff Borzello had a pretty good article that you linked in UV last week, kind of running down all the different options, and it seems like the mid and low major teams are kind of going to get cut out a bit here because... Yeah, staying in these kind of controlled environments, which is going to require a level of testing and cost that I think only kind of the power conference teams are going to be able to pull off. It makes scheduling more simple for the high major teams, which are also limited in terms of we don't know how many conference games there are set to be. And there's, I think, a hard cap at 27 games now for the regular season. So... If you play a 20-game conference schedule, which I think one conference has already announced they're doing, that only leaves 7 games in non-conference. You don't have a ton of flexibility there. And if you're trying to get in a couple quality games, trying to keep these in-season tournament matchups, you might only need to fill in, you know, a couple games against nearby MAC schools, maybe, I think would be probably ideal for Michigan. And one thing that Borzello mentioned is a few schools have started, both at the mid and high major level, kind of creating their own sort of on-campus controlled environments and seeing if they can get a few other teams to kind of come up there for a couple weeks, few weeks, and kind of play sort of mini tournaments with a decent level of competition there, but mostly local.
Yeah, and that one of the things that makes non-conference play more complicated is that you don't know what the testing protocols are for anybody who's not in the Big Ten, if you're a Big Ten school. Like, you don't know exactly what they're doing. You don't know what the chances are that they're going to bring COVID to your team. And so once you get within conference play, I think it gets pretty simple, right? So you've got the ability to play football with 85 to 120 players on a team, you know, making sure that your basketball team is able to get point of contact testing at that point is probably trivial. So it seems like conference play is likely to be achievable even without bubbles. It's just that once you start bringing in teams from various places with various testing regimes, that gets more complicated.
Yeah, I think the two biggest issues are the difference in testing abilities between programs and then travel, because it seems like a huge focus is keeping these teams off of planes, which makes a lot of sense, and keeping this local. And I mean, I guess maybe you can, you know, obviously we know Michigan does private flights because we've become familiar with Michigan's flights before.
Yeah.
So maybe for Penn State, you don't necessarily want to drive out there, or Rutgers, but at least most of the conference you're going to be able to bus around. And for non-conference, I think we're going to see a lot of teams scrap a lot of the currently scheduled games, like how Michigan's got Oregon on the schedule, and go, hey, you know, like Eastern Michigan's next door, and we can probably pay for their testing for that game.
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes more sense to have a regionalized non-conference schedule with these kind of bubbled exceptions where you can get the kind of conference interlocking games that gives you an idea of who should be in the tournament and who shouldn't. So, you know, the 27 games thing, that kind of came out of nowhere in that article. I didn't realize that they had chopped down the number of games. I thought they were going to maybe push the tournament back a little bit to have a regular season. In that case, you know, if you're trying to get your non-conference games in, do you really need to play a MEAC team? Do you really need to play Houston Baptist? Especially because you're not getting any ticket revenue from these games, or at least minimal ticket revenue. So it kind of feels like for a power conference school, it doesn't make any sense to play a low major. And for a one bid conference, you're losing out on the revenue that you get taking these bye games, and that's a problem. But you're also having an NCAA tournament, and you're getting a cut from that. So some belt tightening lower down, but I don't really see a way around it.
It's tough when you've got over 350 teams all ostensibly sharing the same division. It's pretty unwieldy. And also for the, you know, with that 27 game cap, for these power conference teams, you're not too worried about non-conference strength of schedule necessarily, because your conference play is going to make up so much of your resume anyway, that having a couple crossover games and then playing a bunch of teams close by, there's just no reason to really bring in a team from, I would say, even necessarily out of state, to kind of fill out your schedule.
But if you are one of those small teams, like, this is a desperate situation. Like, they are, they've lost all their revenue from this year, and like, those games are what fund their athletic departments. Not to mention, like, being able to get into the tournament, like, some of those teams are looking for one of those signature wins before they go and play a Gonzaga schedule or worse. And
I mean, those teams don't need signature wins. They just need to win their conference tournament.
Yeah,
but it does stink for them that this is how it plays out. But
what are you gonna do? Like, well,
yeah, like there's just no, like, for both safety and basketball reasons, there is not a lot of reason for a high major team to schedule one of these teams, especially if they're not close by.
Oh, there's no reason. I'm just saying that they're in bad shape because of it.
Yeah,
there's never really been a reason for Michigan to play Jacksonville or
Houston Baptist, right? Multiple times.
Like, it's always been a little baffling to me that we play those teams and we never play, like, Detroit
or Oakland.
Oakland, yeah. I've been saying for a while we should play a game at Detroit. That would count as a road game. We're usually kind of in the top 100s in KenPom. And
are you talking about at Callahan Hall or, like, in Detroit?
At Callahan Hall.
At Little Caesars Arena. Oh, come on.
I'd rather play at Callahan Hall.
Yeah. It would count as a true road game.
That would be cooler, but that's not how Michigan would do it.
No. But if you want to get your Detroit recruiting wrap up, I can't think of a better way than playing at Callahan.
Yeah. And, I mean, when's the last time Michigan's played in a barn like that?
They went to Bradley several years ago because Bradley hired Beeline's kid, and that was part of the deal. So
yeah, you really got to hope for some sort of, like, buddy-buddy coaching connection for these kind of things to come off.
That Bradley game was cool.
It was cool because that gym was packed. It was a competitive game. Michigan pulled away in the second half and won by, I think, 10. And it was, like, it was a really great environment. And it's unfortunate that you don't get to see more of that these days. My old man take.
Well, we definitely won't be seeing it this year, so.
No. I'm this year, we're going to just have a season. Whatever it is, it'll be fine.
We'll be happy to see an orange ball go through a basket every once in a while. Yeah.
I think, I forget who it was, there's a college football coach who said that, like, people are talking about how are we going to make this equitable. It's not going to be equitable, and I'm just okay with that because this year it wasn't a coach who was likely to be in a position to have his team in the playoff, but I agree with that sentiment all the same. We don't really have any COVID report nuggets for the football side of things. It seems like the Pac-12 and MAC are coming back for abbreviated schedules as well, based on the new testing protocols that I think are possible. But for the Big Ten in particular, I think it's just status quo.
Houston canceled their third opener.
Yeah, and Notre Dame was just exposed, apparently. So they're going to be all... a whole lot of those guys are going to be out for the next game if they play the next one.
Well, they canceled their Wake Forest or postponed their Wake Forest game. Mm-hmm. They keep saying postponement. None of these games are ever getting made up. Because, like, there's going to be more postponements down the road and more cancellations. It's just not happening. Like, maybe one or two if you get lucky and, like, the team that you're playing has to cancel and the team that Wake's playing has to cancel and you're like, all right, I guess we can get this in. But
figuring out how to rank these teams at the end of the season, I don't envy that job.
I mean, this one's the easiest because you can just be like, whatever, Alabama four times. That's the playoff.
and definitely not Notre Dame.
Well, it's never Notre Dame. But yeah, so we've seen, I think this was a last week number, but there were 29 D1 games played and 16 postponements or cancellations, which is exactly what we were talking about a few months ago when we were like, how is this going to work? If this cancellation rate kept up through the season, you can't have a reasonable conference title game when a third of your games have been canceled. It just doesn't work. So, the Big Ten delaying getting their testing in, hopefully being able to get through a season without many or any cancellations, seems like a fairly good bet right now. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're going to have to thread a needle here with the zero wiggle room that they gave themselves.
That is a good point. There will be no postponements in the Big Ten. There will only be cancellations, which is, I mean, whatever. They're just trying to get it in. And they've paved the way for hockey, so that's all I care about. All right, let's take a break, come back, and talk about something else.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com, that's HOMESURE lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We are awakened with the axe, night of the living dead at last. They have begun to shake the dirt, wiping their shoulders from the earth. I know the nation's past. I know they must at last. They tremble with the nervous thought of having been at last forgotten. So
annually, I go through the recruiting class. I look up every possible article on the internet. I collect all of the relevant data, and I try to summarize it into, 1,500 to 2,000 word posts. The 2020 recruiting profiles have been completed. We're yet to post Dan Villari, but by the time you hear this, we probably will have. And annually, after I get through this series, I have, a different opinion of the recruiting class than I had going in. So this segment is us talking a little bit of current recruiting, but mostly kind of going back and talking about the 2020 class and what.
Well, especially since also like the circumstances have totally changed about their outlook since, particularly since these guys committed and also since you started writing some of these profiles, because all of a sudden they have free eligibility this year.
Yeah, so anybody and everybody can play, so you're probably going to see most of these guys on the field in some capacity, except for maybe an undersized defensive tackle or an offensive lineman. You're going to see these guys on the field. And nobody is going to complain about burning a red shirt. It'll be a wonderful year for everybody who hates the fact that we do that so much.
Also, congratulations on getting these all done with more than a month left before the season. I think it's the first time you've actually done that.
It's September 26th when we're recording this.
Well,
although that statement is still true.
It's still true.
Mark it
count
down.
Count it.
Yeah, rack it up. So a couple of the guys who kind of stood out to me is in terms of I have a different opinion of them after doing this than I did before are Zach Zinter, Andre Seldon, and Blake Corum. So those are the those are the three.
All good, I take?
Those are the three guys who I think I'm higher on after doing all this than I was before. And it's not like I didn't like Blake Corum as a recruit. It's not like I didn't like Andre Seldon as a recruit now. I didn't really have a strong opinion on Zinter. But, if you go back and you look at what these guys have been able to do just with their physical abilities on a football field as high school players, I think that Michigan has a lot to look forward with all three of them. So Seldon, obviously, he's 5'8", and that's the big knock on him.
That would be the hang up.
That would be the hang up. But in all other ways, he's a pretty much close to perfect cornerback recruit. Like, he jumps routes. He's got great hips. He's got the vertical to partially make up for the fact that he's 5'8". You got that video from the All American game where he's up against a 6'8" tight end who went to Georgia. And he gets a pass.
Climbs him like a tree, basically.
Yeah, and like that's not something that's going to happen consistently. But it does give you the idea that he can take on a guy who's 6 foot or even 6'2 and survive out there. And it might not be ideal for Michigan to have him as an outside cornerback, but I think he can do it. I think he can be in that like Winfield, Will Likely class of guys who just make it work.
Yeah, I mean, half the battle for a corner. Yeah, more than that, it's just sticking with a guy. And in terms of sticking with a guy, Seldon is way up there in terms of his ability.
Yeah, and I believe in his vert. So, like, he commits super early in the class, so this is one of the guys where there's the most change between his hello post and the recruiting profile. And, when he committed it real early, everybody's like, he's a good cornerback, but he's also the size of a Smurf. And he's still the size of a Smurf, but I feel like he's done everything possible to prove that he can overcome his height. And so, you go back and you look at tiny cornerbacks' past and hasn't really worked out for them that well. I think Andre Seldon is a guy who you can bet on to overcome that.
Yeah, not all of them made All-American games, and not all of them then got praise in those All-American
right.
games.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things is, like, this guy goes to the All-American game where they have an absolutely loaded wide receiver room, and he is constantly being brought up as a guy who is impressing. And so if he's...
And someone who's seeking out, like, the toughest matchups that he can get, too.
Yeah. So that's as positive a sign as you can have for a high school cornerback. So I think Seldon is going to be a player here probably as early as this year. Zach Zinter is the exact opposite. Just like
he's a larger man.
He's a 6 foot six guy who was listed at 300 pounds for like four straight years in high school. And we know what that means. We're Michigan fans. We know that when someone is listed at exactly 300 pounds, they are nowhere near 300 pounds.
This is like the Mike Onwenu thing, except the high school version.
And Mike Onwenu was listed at 330 in high school because that's as high as their scales went.
And 350 in college. So whenever there's that like flat, consistent number.
Again, as far as the scales go.
The guy in question is just way beyond that, and that's Zach Zinter. Zinter came in and I think immediately started impressing guys. He's drawing a lot of hype because he's about 50 pounds heavier than the 300 he was reported to and is able to move very well at that size. I compared him to Kyle Kalis, which is a very a difficult comparison to make because everybody remembers that Kyle Kalis made a lot of mistakes. When Kyle Kalis was not making those mistakes, he's probably the most road-grading guard Michigan has had in the non-Onwenu category in a very long time. So,
yeah, Kalis is hanging on in the NFL because of his physical ability. Like, in terms of a physical comparison, that's that's still praise.
Yeah. So, and this is a situation where, you know, Michigan goes up against Notre Dame, and like Rhys Atterbury, you know, Notre Dame may or may not back off. I think in Atterbury, it's likely that Notre Dame did back off. In Zinter's case, I think Michigan just straight up won this battle. And, you know, say what you want about Notre Dame, but if Notre Dame is really heavily after an offensive guard, I'm interested in that guy. So yeah, he's if he's a 6'6", 300-pound guard, that's a guy who I think Michigan fans should be excited about. Since he's able to do what he's done in high school at far more than that, and has immediately shown up on campus and gotten a ton of praise without having to trim down an extensive amount, I think that's a guy who's a very good bet going forward.
We should point out real quick, though, that like people were jumping the gun and thinking like, oh my God, is this guy going to be first team? He's the praise he's getting is this guy is on the second team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So a big thing for that is that like the praise for him is that he's even if he's on the two deep at all, he's at guard, where Michigan has a bunch of bodies, a bunch of guys who have been relatively highly touted over the past couple of years. And if he's a true freshman who just showed up and is even in the mix with those guys, they're like, this is the kind of praise you believe because there was no need for it to be there.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then third, of course, is Blake Corum, who I just gave the Mike Hart but fast comparison, which I know is tempting fate.
Sure, that won't bite us at all.
I mitigated it as best I could, but if you look at this guy and you watch his tape, like, he has the patience, he has the stop start, and he has the upfield interior between the tackles running style that Mike Hart did. He's reputed to be an excellent pass protector by his coach and a couple of other scouts. You know, he has the breakaway speed, but, you know, you watch him and you're not looking at a guy and you're not thinking, oh, this guy's going to run a jet sweep. You're not thinking that this guy is a Mike Evans type, right?
I think he's actually got an even better Michigan comp, and that's Jamie Morris. I know some people are too old to have seen a lot of Jamie Morris, but, like, the YouTubes are out there, and between, like, the team's podcast and other stuff, the history, like, that guy is spot on. He's really short, and he kind of, like, hides behind his offensive lineman, and then he likes to take that cut inside.
Yeah.
So he's always looking for an inside cut, and then they never really get a good, I mean, you said this is a very Hart-like thing, too, but it was certainly Jamie Morris as well. And then that breakaway speed, and also his ability in the passing game is already pretty advanced. And
I mean, we've
he's also a very good pass protector.
We've heard a lot about his receiving, but if you look at his stats, it's like 13 catches. So I think that's something that's yet to be established. He has upside there, but this isn't Chris Evans' situation where he was heavily utilized as a receiver. And you wouldn't, because he's just so he's such a great running back and is such a great pass protector that's not going to help.
And that team was loaded.
Yeah, so putting him in the slot isn't going to help you. I think that's something that he would be able to do, but it's probably something that might be a little bit later in his career. But just his ability to be patient and wait for a block to develop and then burst into it. And then once he gets hit by someone, sometimes if you get a clean shot on him, he will stop. But those are rare. And so when you don't get a clean shot on him, the fact that he's so short is actually an asset for him. So he's not a 6 foot Brandon Miner type who runs tall and you can knock back. Although Miner did a really great job of avoiding that, but he's a guy who'll get onto your pads and be able to push the pile. And according to Steve Lorenz, he's up to 204 pounds at 5'8", and that's his NFL combine weight, right? Like, that's, if he's really at that weight right now, he's basically done developing physically, or could be done if he wanted to be. And
he's almost 21 years old already, too.
20, I think.
He's pretty old for his class.
A little old for
development's probably there.
Yeah, so he's probably going to be about what he is as a freshman. So you're not going to get a whole lot of development from him just because he should be so advanced from the drop. But, you know, you just watch the guy run and you're like, yeah, this guy is going to, everything he does here is going to work in college. Like, there's a bunch of high school crap on a lot of people's film, and especially when you watch him live, where it's just like, yeah, you're going to have to get that out of your game. And Blake Corum has almost none of that. Like, there's a play or two here or there where he'll try to reverse field, and it's not a great idea. But other than that, everything he does is like, yes, you do not need a running back coach. You just go. So,
and St. Francis basically played like a, I don't know, the equivalent of a D3 football schedule last year, practically. So, like, if in terms of being ready for facing high-level competition right away, Corum's about as prepped as you can get, and the position where that most quickly translates to college success tends to be running back.
Yeah, and there's one other guy who I wasn't quite on that level of, like, okay, I'm totally in the bag for this guy, but Jordan Morant, the safety, just the way he breaks down and approaches tackles is extremely reassuring. So you know, there's some safeties who will come up and they'll like shoulder charge a guy down and then woof at him.
Early career Josh Metellus.
I mean, yeah, it's a fun thing to do. It looks amazing. It's not very fundamentally sound. It's not.
Sometimes you whack a guy and he ends up still going for like 6 more yards after
right.
that.
You see a lot of those tackles on your running back highlight film as well. So, but Jordan Morant comes in and he reminds me of Jordan Kovacs in this one particular way, where he comes in as a safety and you're like, all right, that tackle is being made. And the way he approaches it, he's not going to lose leverage. He's going to get a solid hit. He's going to wrap up. He's going to put his guy on the ground. And I feel like at worst, you're looking at a boring safety, and we all love boring safeties. And he's got upside beyond that. So he's a guy who I think you should look out for as well. Maybe not this year.
Although maybe this year, given the way they're talking about the secondary lining up.
Well, I was just going to say that Makari Page probably has the drop on everybody else. And
that's true.
Just because he's already run Michigan's defense for 3 or 4 years. So those are the guys who kind of stood out as like, these guys I'm very happy with. In terms of places in the class where I'm a little bit less enthusiastic, I mean, you got to look at defensive tackle. Like, I like Chris Jenkins. I like Chris Jenkins as a developmental prospect. He's obviously got the right genes, but you have no other defensive tackles in this class. You maybe had Aaron Lewis if he was going to bulk up and move down. And, like, part of this isn't entirely Michigan's fault because, you know, you had the kid who went to Kentucky from Oak Park. I forget his name.
Rogers.
Yeah, Rogers. And, like, you know, a kid who goes to Kentucky who's, like, a 5-star or close probably can't go to Michigan even if he wants to. And then I think there were 2 other 4-star defensive tackles in the Big Ten footprint. It was possibly the worst year for DTs in Michigan's core recruiting areas that I can remember. So that's a difficult situation to come up from. But just given the state of the depth chart, you know, I'm pretty disappointed that Michigan didn't get like at least a reasonable, I'm 280 pounds, I know I'm a defensive tackle, I can maybe play in year two.
I need to point out, and I'm trying to dodge around things that everyone knows about recruiting, but like defensive tackles have gotten expensive. Like schools know now that like defensive tackle teams that can have a team that has a Maurice Hurst can hang with Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say I don't think that's the problem with Michigan's class here.
I'm just saying that they're
you just gotta
those
find,
guys.
Like,
if you look at where
tackle.
They're going this year, if you look at where they're going next year, if you look at where those guys, it's not like there's a whole lot of athletic 280-pound high schoolers, right? And
Michigan
where they're
signed
going
Rashawn
is
Gary. I'm like very not feeling this argument.
I'm not saying Michigan's not. I'm saying that Michigan's got a lot of competition for these guys. People get on them early. And you're fighting Ohio State, you're fighting Alabama, you're fighting Georgia. Like, you can say, yes, I'm disappointed Michigan didn't get one. Oklahoma's disappointed they didn't get one, too. USC is disappointed they didn't get one. I mean, it's not just because...
I don't think we're talking about the top tier. We're talking about tier two guys. We're talking about having bodies at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean...
That's fair.
I mean, I'm like a guy like Tonka Hemingway, who's going to South Carolina, who's Junior Hemingway's brother, who Michigan didn't really even kick the tires on. Like, he's in that 3.5-star range. He's going to South Carolina, so if he's getting some bag, like, it's not, like, a real bag. So, you know, not having a second guy in this class who's definitely a defensive tackle, even if Aaron Lewis is some bad luck, I guess, but like that, I mean, that guy's a strong set end, right? Who you might bulk up. And, you know, especially in modern college football with the tempo and everything, it feels like that's a spot where you need two guys. You need a full two deep of guys who can play if you're really going to be comfortable. So just having one is a bummer. And then the other thing that kind of jumps out is, you know, quarterback, obviously, where J.D. Johnson had to retire because of a heart issue. And then, you know, you don't have a guy in the class. You're going after...
You already have J.J. McCarthy in 2021.
Yeah, so it's a situation where you have a five-star in the next class and you're trying to recruit after all the other quarterbacks have gone off the board. I understand why they had to kind of take a swing at Dan Vallari. But missing on C.J. Stroud when Ohio State already had a quarterback in that class is, you know, not great. But
and they also had a 21 five-star commit.
Right, yeah. So it's like – but that's kind of the way it goes, right?
Yeah, we're used to that feeling.
Yeah, and the other thing that pops out that I don't think anyone needs to be told of is that Roman Wilson and A.J. Henning are very fast, and that's good. I like that.
Yeah, I feel like if there's like – I mean, freshman receivers suck. We know this. We're going to get that out of the way right now. But if there's like one thing that you can maybe just like throw a guy out on the field and have them do, it's just like, hey, run a nine route.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Roman Wilson gets some time on the outside where it's just like, hey, just make their safety have to run very far.
Yeah, backwards. I'm not questioning the veracity of 40 times from the opening, but it is nice to hear that as soon as he got on campus, everyone was like, wow, that Roman Wilson is fast.
I mean, dude had a very good 100-meter dash time. That was never in question.
Yeah, I don't think there was a whole lot of doubt that he's a blazer. So, I mean, between Wilson, Henning, Corum, next class has Xavier Worthy in it. The previous class had Giles Jackson in it. Like, there's going to be some serious speed in Michigan's skill positions going forward, which is, can't teach that, right?
I mean... past receivers coaches may disagree, but I do not.
That's a preview of the wide receiver position preview, Ace.
Hey.
We did have a couple of more recent developments. Michigan picked up a commit from a 2022 tight end from Germany, who's now in Georgia. Where was he from, Ace?
Yeah, he is now in, what's the name of the town? He is in a very small town in Georgia at a boarding school that Raben Gap Nakuchi School. But this Marlon Klein is the new commit. He is a little bit more developed than you would expect for a guy who came over from Germany and is playing high school football at a boarding school where the competition is a very much boarding school competition that you'd expect from a school that specializes in its circ program, like as in like circus performing. if you go to his high school's the website, it's pretty wild. There's a reason it costs like probably around $50,000 per year right now to attend that school.
Wait. There's a boarding school that focuses on creating circus performers that costs $50,000 a year.
That's just one part of their many fine arts programs.
Okay, all right.
And at Raben Gap Nakuchi.
This is why you spend so much to go there. That's just one of the many amazing options that you have
to go to Raben Gap Nakuchi.
Like, there's a big difference between like circus, like Cirque du Soleil performers, and like being a carny on a ride.
This is more the former than the latter. Right. We'll go that way.
I was envisioning the latter, just like.
No, this is some elaborate stuff. But anyway, Klein.
I want more facts about this school, Ace.
We'll get to that later. Klein he got a bit of a head start because he went to camps in Germany that were in part run by Bjorn Werner, who played for Florida State and in the NFL for a while before kind of going back to Europe and being a football evangelist of sorts with these camps. And he noticed Klein back in 2018, so when he was just beginning to get familiar with the game. And Werner compares him to Travis Kelce, which is, I would say, lofty, because Kelce is the best tight end on earth right now. But I really, really like Klein's upside. He's 6'6", has the frame to be an inline tight end. He's listed at 215 right now, but there's a lot of room for him to grow. He's got a lot of natural ability. You can just tell, I mean, with tight ends generally, regardless of competition, when you pop on the tape, you get a sense of, like, is this guy a smooth athlete? Is catching the ball natural for him? Like, because with a lot of guys that size, they tend to be kind of fighting themselves at that age a little bit. And with Klein, he looks like a really natural receiver. He is smooth in and out of his cuts, good at kind of boxing out, going up for the ball. So now he's doing it against boarding school kids. So you got to kind of, you know, expect that he's going to have a pretty significant adjustment to college competition. But he's also got a couple years to grow, and he's already 6'6", 215, and he's a pretty smooth, I wouldn't say refined receiver yet, but he's got a couple years to get better on his routes and whatever, start working on his blocking more. And he's somebody that I can see. I mean, I think the ceiling is really, really high on this dude as somebody who can line up kind of all over the field. And
Michigan was really high on him, too. I think Lorenz said that he was maybe Michigan's top tight end on the board.
Yeah, they had him either number one or number two on their board, according to Lorenz. And he had been saying that throughout Klein's recruitment, not just when Michigan got the commitment. Georgia and Florida State had offered him. Virginia Tech had offered him. Several other Big Ten programs, including Purdue, which has done a very nice job of picking tight ends recently. Bryson Hopkins was actually a guy that kind of came to mind in terms of that, having that kind of frame and fluidity. So I love this pickup. I think Michigan got in on a national guy before he blew up.
It's great. I love getting guys from Europe because I'll never forgive Halte Froholt, who's Danish. He's from Denmark, and he went to the United States, and he went to all the various states of the United States, and the state he picked was Arkansas.
I will never understand.
It's like, you got all kinds of, you're Danish, you can't go to Arkansas. I don't know why, but it's just, that's, don't make no sense.
If you're going to see America, you got to see Fayetteville first.
I may be underestimating, like, the redneck segment of Denmark's population. Like, maybe they just got some guys who are on dairy farms and they're like, oh yeah, Arkansas is my jam. So, but I thought for sure we were going to get the Dane.
I mean, given the number of, like, European prospect working out in some, like, weird wooded area videos we see, yeah, you might be onto something.
Yeah. They're looking for the European beaver, which is extinct. I don't know what that
Whatever.
Means.
We've got all of Western Michigan. It's not like Michigan lacks for places where Danes who like lumber can go and, you know, feel at home.
I think.
Yeah, but in Fayetteville, that's like your backyard. In Ann Arbor, you got to at least go on a drive.
I feel like that's with the why. It's like there's that whole, like, vowel shifting accent in Michigan. I'm like, these are your people. Anyway, I don't think we need to relitigate Hjalte Froholt's recruitment any further. Did you guys have anything else in this segment?
I don't think so. I'm
hopeful to get George Rooks in the fold this week. That's we've been talking about defensive tackle recruiting, yeah, and he's one that Michigan identified early as one they really like. And I think we're in good shape. Penn State's the other team that's kind of hoping to get him.
Didn't Penn State just lose a guy with who they had all the balls for to UNC?
Yes, Diego Pounds.
Who's an offensive lineman, who's a guy right now. And then like,
he was born to be an offensive lineman.
James Franklin said something like their recruiting class isn't up to standard, which is like, what are you doing? You know, the recruits in the class are like, oh, really?
Well, they've got a cornerback and a linebacker that that they're from like Cass Tech or King.
The King twins, yeah.
Yeah, the King twins, yeah. So, I mean, if he's not happy with them, I'm sure Michigan could use a cornerback.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, they lost Nolan Rucci, who's like maybe like one of the top offensive tackles in the country, to Wisconsin because his brother plays there, and that could have been predictable. But they were he's a legacy there, so they were kind of hoping to get him, and then they turned to Diego Pounds, and he kind of turned them down too. So little Schadenfreude for Penn State.
The Mac Brown thing is baffling to me. Like he shows up at UNC, and all of a sudden they're recruiting like they're Texas, and I'm like, this guy is like 75. What
recruiting better than Texas ever recruited under?
No, that's not true.
What at Texas he would just get all the Texas four stars.
I mean that's
yeah. So that's already better than UNC's class. I mean argument over. Vince
they got
Young.
Tony Grimes.
Vince Young. We're done.
Yeah.
it is true that Mac Brown's recruiting job at UNC is more impressive than what he did at Texas because he's at UNC. He doesn't get to, like, pick and choose the top guys in the state of Texas every year.
Yeah, the bar is lower, but that kind of works both ways.
Yeah, but anyway. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about something else.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Baby wants a new spin. Baby wants a broken heart.
Now that that there is a football season. There are football press conferences in the lead up to the football season. We had football Josh Gattis talk football on Football Zoom recently.
And the we got one of the greatest coach quotes I think we've had of the Josh Gattis era, which is, we were right there on the cusp of scratching the surface of being something special last year.
We're getting there. We're really getting there.
I mean, that is accurate. Like,
true.
That is.
I can't disagree.
That is exactly what I thought about the offense last year. They're on the cusp of scratching the surface of something very special.
Yeah. Well, I took that, and then immediately Twitter was going, oh my God, I hate talking about this end of the fan base, but oh my God, how can Josh Gattis talk up his offense right now? And he's not. He seemed like he was pretty honest about it.
Well,
now let's talk about all the players he talked up.
I think number one is obviously Joe Milton, who people describe as having wow plays, and you know that is definitely something you're going to need to hear about Joe Milton, because that's the reason he's the starting quarterback, is because he's got incredible upside. So if he's not making wow plays, what is he doing? I also think that you hear that about guys who have a lot of talent, and then the season comes around and you're like, oh, this guy isn't very good. And I'm not trying to like say that Joe Milton isn't very good. I'm just saying that like there's guys in practice who make wild plays get more attention than guys in practice who are just doing the right thing every play without going crazy.
Sure, but it's one thing to hear like this guy's making some big plays, and it's another to hear like the coaches are telling receivers that they need to run out every 70-yard throw because otherwise they're going to miss out on some big play opportunities.
There is Joe Milton hype, and then there's Joe Milton hype minus Dylan McCaffrey. And I think that's the pall that's over this whole thing right now, is that we were getting some Joe Milton hype before the season, but now that McCaffrey's gone, all of a sudden, you know, Milton being awesome is the topic, and it's almost too predictable.
I mean, the Milton hype was coming before McCaffrey transferred. I don't know why this is such a big hang-up. Guy gets a ton of hype. Guy causes the guy in front of him to transfer because he took the starting job. Guy continues to get hype.
That's how it goes.
Like this is a very common way things go in football these days.
I give football players a lot of credit for, you know, knowing where they're at, but... You know, there are ways to keep a Dylan McCaffrey on your roster. I don't like the.
I don't think there's a way to keep him on your roster if he realizes he's not winning the job. I just disagree with that.
Well, so one thing that kind of I hadn't been able to express, because I couldn't figure out why this particular pattern of quarterback accession had bothered me so much, is that, you know, we didn't even have spring practice, so.
Right.
The things that Joe Milton has been able to do have been almost certainly unpadded, possibly unstructured. You know, we're talking about no pads, 7-on-7 stuff. If there's a rush, it's a simulated rush. It's just one of those things where I don't know if there's a body of evidence that Milton could build up in the offseason that makes me feel that what McCaffrey has been able to do on the field in Big Ten games should be passed up. So it's possible.
I mean, whatever he showed, it was enough for McCaffrey to think that he was getting passed up.
Well, so one of the things that, like, I don't necessarily know that McCaffrey's transfer is entirely football related. I'm not saying that it's not. I just don't know
why we have any reason to think otherwise.
Well, just people transfer for reasons that don't have anything to do. And it feels like maybe this is a situation.
But transferring away from the starting job in Michigan?
Well,
like that is bizarre.
I mean, Sam was talking about this. He made it sound like he did not think McCaffrey was transferring just for those reasons. That like there's something more going on there.
Yeah. So that, I mean, and I don't want to speculate on what it might be, but like, even if you're in the situation that McCaffrey's in, you know, he's probably not going to be on a team where he's starting this year and he has an eligibility freebie. So the context for the transfer just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And that means that, okay, maybe it's not a football-related thing. And then you go back to the Milton
I don't know. Like, not wanting to risk COVID while sitting on the bench makes a lot of sense to me.
I mean, he could opt out like Christian Turner if that's what he wanted to do.
That's basically what he did. He opted out, but he also knows that he got passed on the depth chart by a guy who's younger than him. Well, so yeah, that's when you transfer.
If you opt out this year, you're definitely... If you opt out in the middle of this quarterback battle, Joe Milton's not giving that job right back next
year. So what I'm trying to express, it just kind of feels like there's a strong possibility that McCaffrey's transfer was baked in from the start of the Milton hype, and then the Milton hype kind of feels like Johnny Sears hype, where he's getting the hype because he's the only guy he got. And I fully admit that there's a huge range of possibilities with Joe Milton, and he could be an excellent quarterback. It's just it's a really long way to go in one offseason, and I think the heart of the distribution for Milton is not an upper tier Big Ten quarterback. And if Michigan gets, you know, an average Big Ten quarterback year out of Milton, I think that's a win. And that doesn't make me feel very good, especially because you're looking at a situation where you have four new offensive linemen and the depth on your roster is not great. So it's
I will give one heuristic that from Michigan history seems to portend well for quarterbacks, and that is when the quarterback comes back talking about spending an entire summer working with his top receiver. So Milton spent a lot of time working with Ronnie Bell. Previous times we've heard that story was Devin Gardner working with Jeremy Gallen all offseason, and Denard Robinson and Roy Roundtree working hard together, Drew Henson and David Terrell, Tom Brady and Marcus Knight. Like, these are every time we've heard that story, or at least in my memory, every time we've heard about a quarterback and a receiver really just getting together and throwing to each other all summer, that seems to work out, at least for that combination.
Yeah, and that is a positive. But so, I mean, that's my take, and I know that you're a little bit more optimistic, Ace, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm not even necessarily like I'm not here saying like Joe Milton's going to step on the field and be an all-conference player. Like, I just think I'm encouraged by the way things have played out so far. And also, I was so discouraged by Shea Patterson's play last year that I think just if Joe Milton can do some pretty basic things, especially in the running game, that Patterson wasn't doing, then I think, especially with all of the speed on the perimeter you have, where you really don't have to do anything too complicated to get those guys the ball and have some upside in terms of the play, that you can ease in a quarterback like Milton and also have that big play upside that's built in when you have an arm like his.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point, is that if the speed and space aspect of the offense is more emphasized this year, that's a good way to break a guy in.
And if you have a quarterback who can run the running game that you want to run.
Yeah, I mean, to me, McCaffrey was probably going to be the better of the two guys, just because from what we've seen from McCaffrey, he has long speed. And when you go back and you look at his ability to read for some scrape exchanges and some various other games that defenses play, he got that read right almost every time. Limited sample size, but it's just, I don't know.
I'm more choosing to compare Milton to Patterson in that regard than McCaffrey.
I'm with you on that.
Specifically 2019 Patterson, because he was better at it in 2018.
He was.
A little bit.
In the second half of the season, he got pretty okay, but he backslid. I still remember that Michigan State fourth down. Good God.
And, you know, there was the whole, like, bugging out of totally clean pockets thing. I mean, there are some things that are just like, if Joe Milton seems like he's got his head screwed on right, then you have some, like, immediate upgrades to the offense just from that.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it's a long way to go in a year. All right, we should probably move on to someone other than Joe Milton. the other guy who got talked up extensively, at least more extensively, it felt like, than anyone else, was Eric Aull, the second-year tight end.
And that was, let's see, the big pull quote from that was Gattis saying that Eric Aull is going to be a special talent. Those are his words at tight end. I mean, I mentioned on the podcast last week, if Michigan's looking for a downfield threat, he might be the guy. You might get it up the seam instead of down the sideline. But we've seen his catching radius. We've seen that he's enough of a willing blocker to pull off at least masquerading as an H-back at like 215 pounds and actually knock some guys around every once in a while.
And this isn't new hype either. They were talking a lot about him last year when they had a much more stacked tight end depth chart. So, you know, Michigan was kind of just waiting for him to get bigger, and now he's bigger. So that's,
and they backed that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got the like promising early snaps from a guy that you're not expecting them from at a position that's pretty loaded, in preparation, one would presume, for this year. I think he's a high upside guy and somebody who they can use in a lot of different ways. And it seems like Gattis is very much on board with that.
I remember during his recruitment, one of the Ohio State 24/7 guys was like banging the table for him, where he went to Ohio State's camp and he was like, he didn't say this like out and out, but he's like, you have to offer this guy. You have to offer this guy. And they didn't offer, and he went to Michigan, and he was just kind of like, ugh. Because these guys are all OSU partisans, which is fine. It's the beat reporters that really get on my nerves.
Yeah, the recruiting guys, you kind of have to be almost.
Right, yeah, it's just the state of the industry. But when it's like, anyway, we don't need to get into that. Any other notable items from the Gattis press conference?
He did say that, this one very much feels like talking up a guy because you have to. Cade McNamara's confidence continues to soar.
Yay!
But he also, in something that feels a lot more real, said he is very pleased with the running back position and specifically got into Zach Charbonnet and specifically mentioned that he had been battling injuries in high school, came in banged up. Said he quote unquote needed to get cleaned up and battled through a number of different injuries last year and just was impressed that basically that he made it through the season and was still somewhat productive. So it sounds like they're seeing kind of a different Charbonnet this offseason, more the guy that was on that incredible high school tape.
Yeah.
And if we get that, that's a game changer. I mean, and that guy, that's the best high school tape I've seen of a running back that Michigan's brought in. In ever?
He was brought up on the Jansen podcast as well because last year he missed some of the time. He enrolled early, but then really wasn't around because he was rehabbing. So he missed some of the time when you normally would teach a running back the protections. So he was in there starting at the beginning of the season, and he kind of had to pick that stuff up in fall.
He didn't have any problems with that. He was the best pass protection back Michigan's had in a long time. I guess True Wilson.
I'm getting to that point though, but like Jansen was saying that like you know this is a guy they just threw into the fire and he was awesome immediately and like give him a whole offseason now and he's picked up the whole offense. So like things like he might be part of the passing game a lot more this year. Like last year he picked all that stuff up on the fly, and they're really impressed with like his ability to soak in information, I should say.
Yeah, I mean between Charbonnet, Chris Evans, who we've already seen a lot, we know what he's capable of, and Hassan Haskins. Like I love Blake Corum. I don't really know if he's going to be having a whole lot of opportunity this year, especially once you take into account that you're probably going to see some running back snaps for guys like Giles Jackson. So it's going to be tough as far as running back rooms go, maybe Ohio State, but I don't think there's going to be a deeper one in the conference.
And Gattis also mentioned that Haskins, too, was a bit banged up heading into the season and didn't really start coming on healthy until the Illinois game, which is when he started really showing up as a good back, too.
Yeah.
It's also after everybody else fumbled and... the one guy who could hold on to the ball.
It might have been serendipitous that those things happened at the same time.
In Charbonnet's defense, his fumble, he got ear hold on, and it should have been a targeting call. But yes,
yeah,
pretty much. All right. Well, those are the football bits that we have for you from Josh Gattis' press conference. We're going to take one more break, come back with a gimmicky top five that caused Ace to Google Florida Man.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop 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 coming.
Ace! Seth, I need your hottest takes. I need takes so hot you could cook a egg on them for something. We need sports back, guys.
Are we talking your temperature of eggs or David's temperature of eggs? Because like, I don't think we can get hot enough for David's eggs.
No, I think I just put it on like medium high and constantly stir and then turn it down right at the end. So that's my approach. Anyway,
what is David's approach?
David just like whacks it up all the way, and then I don't remember exactly.
And then like lights them directly on fire with lighter fluid,
yeah,
or something.
Just, like, it's like, you know,
it's Breath of the Wild style. He throws it in the fire, then pulls it back out again, and
nice,
boom, you have eggs.
All right,
Seth, I need your hottest take.
Michigan should bring the Trident to the Mohegan Sun Casino and challenge everyone there to take it from them.
Please? Take it from us? I thought you were going to say bury it under there and then run away.
Well, they're not going to have one this year, so Michigan's going to be the Trident champions once again.
No.
Which means there's only one way to be rid of this thing.
I don't want them to, but then that means we have to root for Michigan to lose.
No, they're having it in South Dakota, so I don't know what that is. It's like a fracking well is the trophy this year. I mean, they moved it like it is the most.
Atlantis took their name off. Yeah. They were like, this doesn't have anything to do with us in our resort.
Which is terrible. So they should have kept it. But like, I can't imagine. Like
that building has a high roof. We're it's nothing like us.
You're like, oh guys, I've got great news. Our non-conference tournament this year is in the frickin' Bahamas. High five, everybody. I'm the greatest athletic director in the world, and now you're going to South Dakota in November. Where it's like, do you guys have a Runza? No, that's a couple states over. Oh, it's a bummer, man.
Do they have a Culver's, maybe?
I'm sure they have things.
Hopefully they're in Culver's range.
You got Subway, probably.
Oof.
People dog Subway, but it's like, it's a sandwich. How bad can it be?
Subway anyway, will make you ask that question, that's for sure.
No, it's fine. You just got to ask them for some salt. That's what you got to do.
Anyway, there's a lot of teams there. I was kind of, I was trying to figure out how to put this down into my, but I want Michigan to like just start like a battle royale there, or just have some pickup games. Like, they got all those players there, right?
They really should have a trident. Like we made this joke about it, and now I'm like almost convinced that it exists. And whenever I'm reminded that there is not actually a trident in Michigan's possession, that because they won the battle for Atlantis, I get upset. I'm like, oh, come on.
I can't remember what the actual trophy is, but it's incredibly disappointing.
It's just like trident. A glass bowl or something, like it always is.
We know a guy, he advertised with us once, who makes trophies. We could contact that guy, do like a Kickstarter, and whatever it costs to like make a trident, we could make it and present it to them. They could, you know.
And then burn it! Cleansing fire!
I mean... So maybe that particular trident was cursed, but the trident we will make will not be cursed.
That's the way to break the curse, actually, is to actually make the trident.
Yes, we have to forge the trident anew. Like,
I want no part of this cursed.
Embed the curse into the trident, like, and that's where it will be held.
Like the sword of Anduril.
I want everybody to know that when Michigan basketball crumbles, it was not my fault.
Take it to the dwarf and forge. Feed it the nastiest chunks of coal in the Ever Kingdom, etc. Ace, I need your hottest take!
Well, let's not do any of that is my coldest take. And let me clear my throat so I can get the actual take out. Head hair is bullshit!
Hey.
That's my hot take.
Hey.
I didn't mean for it to go directly at you, but I just shaved my head, and it feels wonderful, and I'm really annoyed that I'm going to have to do it again in a month.
A month?
I mean, it should really be a week or two, but it's COVID times. It's going to be a month, let's be real.
All right. Yeah, I mean, remember there was that protest at the state capitol, like a week into lockdown? And there was a lady who was like, I need my roots are showing. I need a haircut.
I do remember this.
At the time, I thought this lady was crazy. But now I'm coming around a little bit. Just wake up in the morning and dump water on my head because my hair is so damn long. I need a haircut, man. But I don't want to go get a haircut.
We had a member of the household watch a lot of YouTubes on how to cut hair, and now she is an expert at it.
Is that your wife or your daughter?
It's actually my aunt who's staying with my mom while my mom recovers from surgery. Oh. And you know, they're in our circle. So my she did a good job. You guys can all. My son looks even better.
I don't have it.
Get a barber in your circle is definitely the recommendation. Yeah. But
it's not that hard. Watch some YouTubes. Cutting hair has been not that hard to do.
Or be like me and give up on having head hair entirely.
Yeah. All right.
Shaving your head's easy.
All right. Oh, my hot take is bring back Javier Blimpton! So
might need an explanation for that one.
Javier Blimpton is Xavier Simpson wearing a hat. So
Okay, now I got you.
You get an eligibility freebie this whole year. You can play 27 games plus postseason games. You can get it all in. Well, guess how many games that's about? It's about 34, which is how many games Xavier Simpson played last year. So why can you play this year and be able to come back, but not if you played last year, you can't come back. So this is an injustice, and we should put a hat on Xavier Simpson and bring him back.
The question is, do we put a hat on Xavier Simpson, or do we put it on John Teske? Because center's looking a little sketch.
I mean,
and they've got some decent point guards.
I got two hats. I can spare another hat.
Apologies to Jace Howard, but you were a walk-on again.
No, because it's like chaos.
All right, never mind. We're in eligibility.
It's
just, you
Ragnarok
know,
out there for right now. I don't know what's going on, but like maybe they.
Jace Howard, you get two scholarships. Never mind.
Lest we forget, Xavier Simpson already has two names, three if you count the X and Z switcheroo.
Okay,
is this including the one he gave
Jeff
police?
Jackson? Yeah,
okay.
Which maybe wasn't trying to get out of that so much as he was practicing for this year when he comes back as Jeff Jackson.
The long play,
yeah,
not bad.
Well,
and just kind of like forgot, you know, like an actor when they're like, you know, they give the name of the role they're playing because they're so involved in that role.
Yeah. I think we're talking about like hat, also glue on mustache. Like he could probably grow a regular mustache, but he's got to do the glue on.
Oh, no, full on Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
They got to do it that way.
Yeah.
If we're accessorizing that much, we should bring back Marx.
Yeah. Let's just bring them all back. Right.
Jordan Poole, baby. I'd be so happy.
I think he's a little busy right now. All right. If you would like us to continue doing this segment for God knows what reason, cut that.
You should cut that.
If you would like us to continue doing this segment for whatever reason, you should probably consume Fuego Box hot sauces. They will send you 3 hot sauces every month to your door. Focused on flavor, not merely heat. You can get $10 off your first month if you go to MGOBlog10. You can get $10 off your first month if you go to fuegobox.com/MGOBlog.
Very, very spicy.
All right, so I was watching a highlight video of J.J. McCarthy playing a team in Tennessee. I think it was called Ravenswood, Junior Colson's team. And they scored a touchdown. Ravenswood scored a touchdown in the midst of a 42-14 loss, and they cut over to the student section, which was like straight out of 2019. There was no
pack to the gills,
pack
baby.
To the gills, all screaming, all putting aerosols all over everything, just to watch a high school team lose by 4 touchdowns. And I was like, "What are you doing? What are we doing here?" So, in honor of the Ravenswood, Tennessee High School student section, our gimmicky top 5 is the top 5 worst ways to get COVID. Worst risks to take, just
worst things to risk COVID for, yeah. I think was how it was put in the Slack
worst,
chat.
Worst things to risk COVID for. Seth, you're number 5.
An Ohio State / Iowa parents tailgate outside the Big Ten office.
Strong.
And you know it's a tailgate because there's one guy from Illinois who's like, "Hey, I'm just here visiting the campus. You know, my team sucks, so I don't really care what happens to my guys this year. But I really wanted to see what you guys are like." And that was pretty much what the photo was. So
people bought plane
tickets. I mean, there was nobody in the office, so it couldn't have been anything else.
No, they protested an office with nobody in it. What is
for a press release? What they were asking for was a press release. They wanted nothing less than a press release.
It's just...
There's been a lot of stupid during the last several months, and that one really is way up there.
Ace, you're number...
Way up there.
Ace, you're number 5.
Oh, man. Using a bottle labeled COVID-19 to spray an unknown substance on the doors of businesses, telling the employees and patrons that they were infected, and getting arrested for using a quote-unquote hoax weapon of mass destruction and spending months in jail before the charges were dropped, where jail's pretty likely to get COVID. So that seemed real bad. You're gonna get a theme from my top 5, and as you may have already guessed, the theme is things people in Florida do.
My number 5 is beer, because beer, you could go to a bar, you could have some beer, and then you might get COVID. Or you could not go to a bar and have the exact same beer. Like a cocktail, I guess I could understand. A restaurant, I guess I can understand that. You know, you want to go, you want to have some goat's liver with duck brains. You're not going to be able to do that at home. But this is a situation where you can take a can out of your refrigerator and open it, and it's the same.
Or a bottle, if you're feeling fancy.
Or a bottle.
I. When this is over, let's go to Ashley's and see if it's really
sure, you could get some beer on tap, but it would be different.
But for the negligible difference in
but
quality.
I'm talking about the people lined up at Harper's. They are not getting cask-conditioned Kentucky breakfast stout. They're having...
No, they're getting the beer that's on the sign that's outside Harper's.
They are getting
Bud Light,
Natty Light. They're getting something in a cup that tastes like a skunk. This is not the same situation.
Would you risk COVID for a Long Island iced tea?
No.
Okay, that makes the list too, then.
Fine, I'm going to write it down. Beer plus Long Island iced tea.
There we go.
Very typing podcast. Seth, you're number four.
A handoff party for a college football preview magazine about a college football season that, if it happens, will only have a passing resemblance to the one that's previewed in your magazine.
This sounds like something you may have literally done.
Multiple times this summer, actually.
Multiple.
And every time I was explaining it to my wife, and she's like, so really, what you're going to do is...
So you told me about one that I was supposed to be at, and I just deleted it from my mind because it just didn't seem like a thing that I could possibly do.
Yes, Carl Grapentine was there to introduce us, and when he went to go do so, there was no Brian Cook from MGO Blog, only Seth. And people standing all 6 feet away from each other, expectantly waiting for you to like pop out of the ground or something.
You only told me once, and then it just didn't occur to me that I could ever possibly have an in-person event. So
they actually went off pretty well. Oh, okay. I used a big area so people could come and get their books and like say hi to each other, and then a few people got to hang around, and the one up north was kind of nice. The only problem is the end of it. A lot of people who were not Michigan fans kept on coming up much closer to the table than anyone was comfortable with and being like, why are you doing a Michigan book here? Explain, I'm a Michigan State guy. I don't need to. Yeah. That was exactly what he sounded like, too.
I've met that guy.
Yeah.
Or at least someone very, very like him.
But I kid, because they were actually pretty worthwhile, because people had to wait a while for the mail this year, and those who got their books first were pretty happy about it, even though, I'm sorry, the cover athlete's not even playing this year.
Well, you know, that'll happen. Ace, you're number four!
Using over a third of your business's $2 million in coronavirus relief money on a 40-foot boat, and then registering that boat in your own name, getting arrested on federal charges, risking 30 years in federal prison where you are very likely to get COVID. Florida is an incredible place.
All right. My number four is a Smash Mouth concert.
This happened. Oh my god, this really happened.
Literally happened. There was like a giant biker rally in Sturgis, South Dakota, and they had a Smash Mouth concert.
And so many cases have been tracked back to this.
And I'm just like, what do they even do once they get done with All-Star? Do they have can they even have a concert?
They play the song from Shrek, and then they play All-Star again.
Is it?
Then they play Walking on the Sun, and then they play All-Star again.
Is it?
That's it. That's the end of the
That's
set.
It?
Yeah.
And people are like, yeah, I'm going to do this. this is a good risk. This is what
we've already spoken on this podcast. There's not a whole lot to do in South Dakota.
This has been very harsh on South Dakota, this podcast.
I don't feel bad.
We probably don't have any listeners from there.
Not anymore.
True.
There's one guy who like started listening when we were playing the Jackrabbits, and ever since then he's just like, these guys are cool.
Seth, you're number
but
three.
Not anymore. This is another thing I actually went to. A birthday party for a one-year-old.
Oh, my God.
In a parking lot.
What?
In a parking lot when it's 100 degrees out.
So our social group, they've been doing like drive-through birthday parties where like you get in your car with your child and then you drive past the houses of people who are waving and maybe stop to talk and drop off cake or whatever, which is
yep.
not great, but I guess not that. God.
Yeah.
Now, my neighbor did a pretty cool one where she had, like, all sorts of outdoor activities, and it was an all-day deal where, like, only three kids could come at once, and everyone kind of, like, one kid per activity.
How old was this kid?
It seemed... That kid's nine.
Nine!
And they had, like, you know, there was, like, we did, like, a slip and slide. I helped set her up, like, a slip and slide out there with, like, this huge duck. And they, like, and she's got a big hill in her front yard. So, that one was cool. That one, I had nothing, no problem with that birthday party.
A nine-year-old's birthday party should be a day off from the coal mine.
I was going to suggest long-distance laser tag, but there's also that, I guess.
Anyway, a one-year-old is not going to remember this anyway, and a parking lot is 20 degrees hotter than any other place, and yeah, I really didn't understand why we're all sitting in our tailgates, staring at each other.
The one-year-old is what really gets me, where it's just like, it's not even for the child. Like, Estelle Getty Cook, I think we were going to B. Arthur Cook, turn two, like the grandparents came over, and she was completely happy with that, because she's two! Anyway, Ace, you're number three!
Oh, man. Ordering a Lyft, getting very offended by the protective coronavirus barrier that the Lyft driver has put up between the back and front seat, attacking the Lyft driver by destroying the coronavirus barrier. All the while, there is a 7-year-old in the back of the car. Therefore, you get arrested and charged with battery and child abuse. Florida, baby!
That's going to jail and getting COVID.
Yes. I told you it was going to be a doozy of a list.
Swing state. My number three is a baby reveal forest fire.
Fair enough.
I don't know if this has actually happened, but I have to assume that the baby reveal forest fire has pushed some people into close proximity to other people who have COVID, thus facilitating the spread of the disease. All to tell people something you could have just discovered when the baby was born. I don't know. This seems like a bad idea. Why is everybody setting things on fire at the baby reveal parties? It's not as much of a problem with other parties. Like,
have they noticed that the West Coast is kind of a tinderbox right now? Because it's in the news.
We needed something to end gender reveal parties. Like, this is a thing that entered our culture fairly recently, and I don't know another way to get rid of it.
Here's the COVID? Thing. This is not the first forest fire that's been started by a gender reveal party,
no!
So I don't think this is going to solve anything.
So, I mean, like, there are frats, right? There are frats having parties every day, everywhere.
I can hear them from the house I live in right now.
And they don't,
if I open my window.
And they don't set things on fire. This is like frats. Frats. Frats have
more responsible
than gender reveal
first time parents. Yeah.
Come on, man. Seth, you're number two.
This is actually a thing that I was going to go to, and now I don't have to because football is going to happen that weekend. Your wife's mother's second cousin's second wedding.
Too many seconds.
All right, say that one again. Say it again.
Your wife's
mother's
mom, second cousin.
Second cousin.
Second wedding.
Yeah, what does that make the husband?
Doomed.
Yes, so we're talking about someone, my mother-in-law's second cousin, so he's like in his late 60s, maybe 70. I feel bad saying we can't come, but like, we should not be doing this.
Oh.
And And one person who is a professional blogger who gets to say, I was going to come, but Michigan football is going to start that weekend now, so.
As opposed to all the other RSVPs, which are going to be sorry, but the COVID,
I apologize, but I am now indisposed.
All right, I'll make sure that I harass you on Twitter immediately before this event.
Or give Seth a weekend off. That's evil.
I'm going to send your mother-in-law's second cousin a formal notice that Seth has that weekend off. Ace, you're number two.
All right. Y'all ready?
No.
Conspiring with three of your sons to sell a quote-unquote miracle mineral solution that actually becomes a quote-unquote toxic bleach when ingested, then fleeing to Colombia, where you get caught and extradited back to the United States to face federal fraud charges, which will likely land you in jail, where you will get COVID.
All right. How did you order these?
Blindly, I think. The order I found them in, mostly. Although, actually, number one is number one for a reason, okay. And we will get to that.
My number two is ice fishing. Just seems like a bad idea, getting in a small area with another person to fish for things when it's really cold. Seems like a terrible idea in any situation. In a pandemic, what are we doing?
What prompted that one?
There's an episode of Frasier where they go ice fishing.
It would be Frasier somehow.
Yeah.
I was expecting like Fargo, but no Frasier.
Yeah, because, you know, the father wants to do something with his sons, and his sons want to go to the ballerina expose, and you know, he wants to go ice fishing. So for his birthday, they go ice fishing, and they fight, and they make up, and it's a Frasier episode. You've seen it. Come on. But anyway, getting COVID and ice fishing seems like a stupid idea. Seth, you're number two! Number one!
Yeah, so keeping with the theme of things that I've been invited to, a friend of mine who is a good and dear friend of mine, still, surprisingly, <about to ask. laughs> suggested that if they play this year, we should go down to Columbus for the Michigan-Ohio State game. Oh. To which I politely responded, let's just watch it on TV.
That was about as polite a possible way as you could respond.
Ace, you're number one.
Okay, this one. Oh, I love this one so much. All right. Spending your business's $4 million in coronavirus relief aid, federal coronavirus relief aid, on a Lamborghini, jewelry, clothes, resort visits, and not one but two $30,000 payments to a person you wrote down as quote-unquote mom in your financial documents, continuing to request nearly $14 million more dollars in federal relief funds, and now you face 70 years in prison for federal fraud charges and are likely going to prison where you will get coronavirus. He put mom on the financial documents.
Mom. This sounds like a person who's going to get pardoned.
I mean, maybe a mentally unfit defense is the one to mount here.
All right. My number one is an IRL Twitter fight. Remember the Temecula thing?
Fondly.
Can you imagine going to Temecula, meeting a guy who wants to beat you up, and getting COVID from that guy?
And there's a 50-50 shot that you're the one who gets beat up, too.
You know, probably, yeah. So that would be the worst way. You know, you get so mad online that you're like, all right, put up your dukes, buddy. And then I kind of feel like you guys, I should have gone first and you guys should have gone last. But sorry, guys. Here we go. You definitely one-upped me, but I enjoyed it all the same. Thank you.
Sorry for Florida Manning this thing.
Oh, Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. The biggest purchase appears to have been made on May 18th, when Mr. Hines bought a blue Lamborghini for $318,497 in North Miami Beach, officials said. He registered the vehicle under his name and that of one of his businesses. Have a good day.
God, we need some sports to talk about.